Good afternoon. Is that, that's fine. You can hear okay? That was a beautiful meditation. Thank you. We kind of left off with this idea of building our consciousness of truth. To continue with the various analogies we've been having, one of the great traditions of esoteric study has been Masonry. And that's one of the first things that Joel got into when he was young. When he went on this hero's journey, he had heard a voice or an impression saying, become a Mason. So he went out and he discovered what it was, and he wanted to be a Mason, but he was too young. You have to be 21. He was only 19. So he had to wait until he was 21. And when he joined the Masons, it was that practice gave him an insight into the nature of building a spiritual consciousness. So the degrees, the steps are, the first degree is where you have the desire. That's where you've been touched by this spirit, by this impulse within to take that path less traveled, to move off and begin that hero's journey. And that first degree leads you to a master, a mentor, an organization, some form that gives this desire to know the truth some context. What is this about? It's not just about power or peace or freedom. It's about discovering the secrets of life, the secrets of the universe, those principles that allow you to experience fully all that life in this experience has to offer. So in the beginning degrees, you are always questioned, what is it that you desire? What do you want? Do you want money? Sorry, this isn't the path for you. There's other ways to make a lot of money. Do you want power? Sorry, this isn't the way to power. If you want power, there's other material means for you to get power. Do you want fame? Well, no, this isn't the way to become famous. Because remember, before you can pull that sword from the stone, before you can really grab that golden bough, there has to be the humility that basically says, what I am seeking is the truth for no other reason, for no other purpose. I just want to know what is. I want to know, how do I fit into this life that seems to have so many different paths, when there is one particular path out of the millions of opportunities offered that will take me on a direction where I will find out what the meaning of life is. That's the hero's journey. So that beginning stage in Masonry gives the initiate the beginning steps. It questions the motive. Spiritually, if your motive is not pure, now that's seems like a very theological thing. Oh yes, a pure at heart. The pure at heart see God. You have to have a certain purity to be able to experience this message. It has nothing to do with human behavior. The purity really has to do with intent. What is the intent of your heart? What is the purpose for taking this journey? And if the purpose for the journey is pure, then the way starts opening out. If there is reservation, now when you begin your Masonic journey, you swear and what you swear to is without reservation, mental equivocation. You are completely going into this activity. It's a structured activity. It's a learning. If you're going into this revealing of the truth completely with an open heart and a pure motive. If you are deluding yourself, if you are thinking, yes, I'm very pure, but I want this pain to go away, there's going to be blocks. There's going to be these obstacles. And the obstacles in the esoteric path are considered initiations. They're not obstacles where you just go around it or you climb over it. You really have to experience and go through the initiation so that you understand, that you gain the consciousness of the principle. Every initiation involves the revealing of a spiritual principle. Whether that initiation has, and it just addresses every aspect of human experience. So when that is established, that your motive is pure, you are led into the temple. You're not even allowed into the temple until this point. Then when you come into the temple, you are given a charge, and that charge is to learn the basic principles. And using the analogy of masonry, you are informed about the tools that you need to practice your craft. And it's the tools are pretty obvious. Spiritually, the tools are the awareness of universal principles. In masonry, the tools are basically about character. So you have the level, which is an intricate tool to build a structure, meaning that you always measure yourself. Are you on the level? Are you doing this with a pure motive and with that realization of brotherly love, of unconditioned love? The other major tool is the plumb. Are you straight? Is this true? A building that isn't plumbed is not straight, and it will fall down because it's not true. So you measure your actions. Is this true? Or am I deluding myself? Now, this is something you ask yourself all the time. Is my motive on this true? Am I really seeking the revealing of the truth? Or am I seeking the truth for some reason? Our conditioning is based on reason. Our human conditioning is always based on cause and effect. If you do this, such and such will happen. If you don't do this, such and such will happen. So we're always measuring our activity by this reason sense. And spiritually, there is no condition on it. There is not if and then. I remember when way back when we first got computers, and I took a programming course just to try and understand what this new machine was all about. And the basic programming was all about this, about if and then. If you do this, then that will happen. If you don't do this, then something else will happen. And that is the human mind. And it's always if and then, if and then. Doesn't work spiritually. Because if and then is a process. If and then is time. If and then is an action and a reaction. Spiritually, we're in the now. There is no if I do this, then that will happen. The spiritual question is, is this the truth? Is this real? Is what I am, that what is coming to me, does this meet the criteria of those benchmarks for the hero's journey? Unconditioned love, brotherly love. Is it universal or is it personal? Is it universal or is it localized? Is it giving power outside of I? When you start measuring the motives, your motives, with this kind of questioning, then you are moving through the first degree and learning the principles. So that's a learning degree. You're apprenticed. You're not, you haven't made it into the realm of actually doing work. So for us, what are the primary principles? I repeat them to myself all the time, because you cannot repeat them too much. It is oneness. The basis, there is only one. It is now, the principle of now. There is no future or past that is real. The future is your imagination and the past is your memory. And the future, you can imagine a great future or a dastardly future. I remember working with my dear friend who was a producer that says, why speculate? That's all just, you know, you're trying to anticipate what somebody might say, and it's ridiculous. It's useless. Has no reality, because the reality is what's taking place in the now. If you have a project that's out to be considered, it's either going to be yes or no. Then if you keep thinking, well, I wonder if they're going to say this, what does that do? All that does is create an environment within your own mentality that is not peaceful, that is not in the present, and that attitude is something that can disrupt and open yourself to this world's judgments of what is good, what is bad, judgments of personality. What does he think? Does he have good taste? Does he not have good taste? Is this going to be accepted? Will they like it? Will they not like it? In truth, you have to be completely singular. That is, your focus is on the present, the focus is in the now, the focus is on one. So when you have now one, you have in this now moment, what is the atmosphere that shows up with the next principle? Well, that principle is love, unconditioned love. This is a universe of love. It isn't a universe of contention. That when I see something, when I see hatred, when I see animosity, jealousy, all of those kind of human attributes that are destroying that sense of love, what do I do? Oh, I realize that is projection. That is part of the if and then. I move back into the now, into unconditioned love. Now, love in Scripture always had three elements. There were actually in Greek three different words for love. There was agape, which was the spiritual love, and that sense of love is completely unconditioned. You can't do anything to deserve it. It is a state of grace. And a state of grace is experienced when you are in the now moment and realize that there is only one. That love that you experience in that is agape. That is pure, unadulterated. Then there is philios. That love is brotherly love. That kind of love is that you scratch my back and I'll scratch your back. It is dependent upon another. It isn't in oneness. It is it is an activity of caring. It is an activity of compassion, but it is also an activity that can be withdrawn. And if it's withdrawn, and you're still being in that filial state, and the other person says, "Don't scratch my back anymore. I don't like it," then what does that do to you? Then all of a sudden, you're thinking, if you're personalizing it, "Oh, what have I done wrong?" And you start condemning yourself. Well, all you have to realize is that I've been functioning in a personalized sense of love, and I can impersonalize that love and realize that there is no object to it because I am that love. Now, in the story, in the biblical story of Jesus, before Jesus is crucified, he asks Peter, "Do you love me?" And Peter says, "Of course, Master, I love you." Jesus said, "Do you agape me?" And Peter responded, "I filio you. I love you as a brother." And Jesus said again, "Do you love me? Do you love me as one? Agape. Are we one in this unconditioned love?" And Peter, who represents the highest human nature of the disciples, doesn't get it. He says, "Of course I love you. But in the Bible, it's presented, I love you as a brother. You're as close to me as any brother I would have had. I'd do anything for you." And then Jesus says, the third time, "Peter, do you love me?" But Jesus uses the filio. And the story is that you cannot rise into this unconditioned love from the human state. The highest human state of love is philios. To be in agape, you cannot have another. You cannot have two. You can only have one. And then the third aspect of love is the purely physical, eros, the erotic. And that love really has very little attachment. That kind of love is the fulfilling of physical desire. You know, satisfying, you know, that itch, so that, you know, and some people are more itchy than others. So there used to be a line in theology or in morality that said, "Oh, eros is only acceptable under certain conditions. If you're married, if you have been blessed and sanctified by the church, otherwise it's a sin." Now, why would that be such a sin to so many people? Well, because they wanted to control the population. They wanted the population to obey rules, to have the population set. And the way to do that was to put these restrictions. The thing that every human being needs and does has to be restricted, and it has to be codified. There's only one kind of love that is valid, you know, theologically. Many forms of love are not accepted. When the missionaries came to the Hawaiians, they brought their Calvinistic form of Christianity with its sin and punishment and all of that. But the Hawaiians had been in this very restrictive kapu system, this very restricted social system that I mentioned before. And so when the Christians came, they found that to be a lot more loving, caring, compassionate. Men and women could eat together. You could have communications. And they adopted Christianity. But as Hawaiians had told me, Christianity only went down to the belly button. Below the belly button, they remained their old, with no restrictions. In their society, there was no judgment on sex whatsoever in any form. And these kind of concepts, we all are conditioned with them. And it depends on where our, how our conditioning is. If you grew up in a society that had absolutely no judgment, where behavior was, especially sexual behavior, was completely anything goes, then anything goes. But if you were grew up in a structure that said your sexual behavior is the greatest sin if you're not doing it the way it is supposed to be, it creates a tremendous amount of guilt. And that guilt and those concepts and those beliefs alter our perception of how we look at others. And that never gets above the filios. And to really experience our true nature, we have to get beyond all of those conditions, all of the physical as well as mental as well as social as well as theological restrictions that have been put upon humanity. And not for, you know, it's not arbitrary. There's good reasons why we do, you know, the society had certain rules and restrictions. But those rules and restrictions all have to fall away if we are going to experience the level of consciousness that will bring us this fulfillment spiritually. If we are completely fulfilled from within, all of our relationships come at that level of agape. They come with unconditioned love. And if the relationships are there's a chemistry and we're attracted, we find that our relationships are harmonious, loving, fulfilling. They outpicture the whole unfoldment of humanity. If we are going into relationships from a level other than the agape, those relationships are subject unto the beliefs and the structures and the cause and effect of the conditioned sense, the conditioned mind. So, gosh, that was a long little dissertation on love, because what we were talking about are these principles. So that principle of love in a way cannot be separated from oneness, and it cannot be separated from the now moment. Even in the most physical sense, true love just takes place in the now. People can think about it and project about it, and people can remember it, but there's no satisfaction except in the now moment, when love is experienced. So love really is an experience. When that experience is spiritual, then it is universal, and whatever relationship we're in is enhanced by that recognition, by that awareness. The other great principle that we learn in the first degree is forgiveness. Forgiveness really is about cleansing our concepts. It often, when we are confronted the situation we're confronted with has to do with our own unfoldment spiritually, has to do with advancing our own degree of spiritual understanding. So the opposite of forgiveness is condemnation and judgment. So if we condemn and we judge, we create conflict. If we create conflict, we make enemies, and that creates a whole dynamic which cements us into a human sense of if and then, cause and effect. Well, if he does this, then I'm going to do that. But if he doesn't do this, then maybe I will forgive him. Maybe I'll be magnanimous. well, that really isn't forgiveness. That is using a spiritual principle for a personal manipulation. But true forgiveness is being able to see the spiritual nature in another, no matter what their behavior. It's being able to see through that which is destructive, that which is offensive, and realize that what is the motivation there. If I see the Christ, if I see the spirit behind that behavior, I'm wiping out any effect that behavior can have. If I am untouched by someone else's anger or someone else's concepts, then I am free. And that freedom allows me to function as an agent of spiritual consciousness. It allows me to maintain that connection of oneness, maintain that awareness consciously, so that I am realizing this presence. And in realizing this presence of God, I am, that's the greatest love anyone can give, is the presence of God. Now, to realize the presence of God, you have to have a handle on all these principles. You have to, in the first degree, you are desirous of experiencing this, and you start learning how you can do it, but you have not yet been tried by fire. So you take an examination. You are questioned, and if you pass that examination, then you move on to the second degree. And in the second degree, you apply the principles that you have learned in the first degree. And the application of these principles, the analogy goes back to King Solomon's temple and building the temple. We're building our temple, which is a consciousness. Now, if we go through the first degree, we basically have approved the plans, we've looked at what's going on, but we haven't gone out there and made a structure. We have not gone out there and gotten ourselves dirty and faced the problems that we face in trying to put brick and mortar together and make a building. We build this consciousness through our confrontation or are meeting the problems of this world from a spiritual level, from spiritual principles. And there is a whole, again, there is a whole structure of this. And this is termed in Masonry the middle chamber. This is analogous to Saturday after the crucifixion, when Jesus supposedly goes into hell. This is analogous to that point in the hero's journey where they find themselves in unbelievable situation. If you were watching a drama, you'd say, he's never going to get out of that. How is he going to get out of that? Or how is she going to get out of that? Well, you reach down into the depth of what you know, and you pull out this strength, this consciousness, and that, and usually you have to abandon most of what seems logical or what you think you should do, because this is that state where you say, either I'm going to rely on spirit and this works, or I'm not ready for this and I'll continue living my human life. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. Look at out of 7 million people in Los Angeles, there's 30 here. It's not that there's any glory in that, but it is the desire to spend your time and your your money to come in and explore this dimension of life means that you are on this journey. You've made a commitment to it, and there is going to be results. There is going to be unfoldment. There's going to be fruitage. By your fruits you are known, it says in Scripture. So in this mid-chamber, of the 80,000 journeymen working King Solomon's temple, those exemplary workers were given mystic grips and symbols to enter the middle chamber upon the completion of work on the sixth day. So here we are entering into a rest. That rest, that structure that goes back to Genesis, where for those 6 days, everything comes into manifestation. Out of nothing, there comes the light, there comes the universe, there comes the earth, there comes all of creation on the earth. Then that seventh day, you go into a contemplative mode. You go into that state of consciousness where you are looking at what has taken place, and you're finding the spiritual import of what is going on. To enter the chamber, the fellow craft goes through a porch and up a flight of stairs consisting of 3, 5, and 7 steps, and through an outer and an inner door. So all these symbols relate to our overcoming the concepts, the conditioning of material sense. 3 steps alludes to the great lights of masonry. This is the Mason thing, the Holy Bible, the square, and the compass. Spiritually, those 3 steps are body, mind, and soul. The soul of man is God. The mind of man is the instrument of God through which we experience God. And the body is the expression of God. Now, all 3 of these are spiritual. There's not a material body. There's not a carnal mind. There's not a rewarding and punishing God. There is this infinite consciousness functioning through a pure mind, an unconditioned mind, which is esoteric. It's not physical. It's not housed in a brain. It is in consciousness that it is the individual accessing this state of beingness whereby we experience infinite consciousness. Now, we're doing that spiritually. Our material bodies are a suit of clothes. We can take this body off at will. As Jesus said, I can lay down my life and pick it up again. These bodies are immaterial to the spiritual reality. But we have a spiritual body. We always will have a form. We always will have a body. And if this spiritual body is in oneness with the unconditioned mind, then that infinite consciousness is the substance and form and activity of that body. When we realize that individually, what happens to the thought process? It stops and it becomes this avenue for experience. What happens to the physical body? It becomes the outpicturing of the spiritual experience. And the spiritual experience is one of complete freedom. It's harmony. There's nothing in consciousness that is inharmonious. There is no dis-ease. There is no distemper. There is nothing that would create conflict that would disturb the peace. That peace that we feel is God incarnate. That is the Word made flesh. That Word, that when we take those three steps, body, mind, and soul, we have entered the first stage of this inner chamber. And it is this inner chamber where everything is made. It's like you're in a great foundry. You go into the inner chamber and you're making steel. What comes together? You have the raw elements. You have the magic, you might say, heat. Without the heat, the iron and the coal and the coke, nothing happens to it. It's just dirt. But when you add this other element, heat, all of a sudden it comes together and it can make steel, it can make skyscrapers and airplanes and automobiles. We take these same elements, these wonderful spiritual elements that are mind and body, and take them out of the material, and with that application of consciousness, that realization of consciousness, it transforms. It takes those crude elements and transforms them into this Christ. It's what Christ consciousness is. It is that individual that has been transformed through this realization into not man who has his out of the dust of the ground, but man who has his being in Christ. Woman who has her being in Christ. Christ is not gender specific. Christ is the activity of God, Christos, the activity of God in man, in consciousness. And the five steps, those are the five orders of architecture. In the ancient world, you had specific definitions of what is beautiful, what is harmonious. The Greeks developed their golden proportion, which was they used in their temples, which was length and breadth and height, to be the most pleasing to our eyes. The most pleasing when we entered a space, so we felt, oh, this space has something about it that affords us to transcend out of if we were living in small little hovels in a city, or whether we were having to wander the streets. We enter into these spaces that through consciousness have been practiced and discerned, and suddenly realize these spaces, these orders of architecture, what do they bring to humanity when they enter it? They bring awe. Oh, this is not personal. This is not of just my own thinking. They bring harmony. Oh, I can feel the peace in here because everything is harmonious. They bring proportion. Everything comes together in a beautiful manner. Now, also these five steps are analogous to the senses, the five physical senses. When the senses are in harmony, the whole we are in harmony. When our feeling and seeing and hearing and touching and smelling all are in harmony, in oneness, we then transcend out of a physical state into an esoteric state. We have a different experience where our senses individually, they have, you know, they are valid. I mean, we enjoy all the different senses that we have. We enjoy our tasting our food. We enjoy the beauty of our sight. We enjoy the music that we hear. We enjoy the embrace of a loved one. All those senses are wonderful in their separateness. But when they are all together, when they are in harmony, completely together, then we transcend the senses and we end up in a state of consciousness where spirit is functioning. the seven steps. Now, seven in all the ancient world was a number of completeness. It was 7 days to create the world. Seven has always been the 7 days in a week. It's been a mark of fulfillment. Things have been fulfilled. Now, in the Masonry, they allude to the seven liberal arts, which are and sciences, grammar, rhetoric, logic, arithmetic, geometry, music, and astronomy. You might say that that makes it to that ancient world, to that culture, that was the completeness of society. That allowed a world to be built. That allowed for all of the activity of a society to function in harmony and peace. So we enter this chamber, and we are now aware. We are aware of the oneness. We are aware of the Trinity. We are aware of our senses. And we are aware of what makes society complete. All those elements. The beauty, the science. Now, here we are. In this chamber. What do we experience? What is here? Harmony. Wholeness. What are the tools? The esoteric tools, the spiritual tools. There's seven of them. Oneness, nowness, completeness, omnipotence, omnipresence, omniscience, unconditioned love. We are complete. We have every tool now, and we are experiencing these tools in a new way. So when we go out and go back to work, go back to the job, go back to chopping stone and putting it together to build this temple, we have now experienced these tools on every level. And every week, the completion of the seven, every seventh day, we go into this middle chamber. We go into this temple. We go into this consciousness. And this is the nature of the rest. It's not lounging at the beach. It's not watching football games. The rest that we have is the peace of knowing this totality of being. Well, I think it's time for another little rest.